This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Roddy Jones in about 15 minutes. Sean McDonough at the bottom of the hour. But Wes, as you said, Friday staple, one stat per game.
Oh, yeah.
We will deliver these next 15 minutes, everything you need to know about every ACC game.
All right, we go in chronological order typically with this, so let's start with NC State, North Carolina, high noon, Keenan Stadium tomorrow. NC State, 4-1 on the year, despite punting on 41% of their drives. Only one other school has a higher figure, and that's Syracuse.
State's numbers will make you run into a wall and go, man, they're having a lousy year. Then you look at the most important thing, wins and losses. Dave Dorn, by the way, as we pointed out earlier this week, Dave Dorn loves him some Keenan Stadium, doesn't he? Dave Dorn, yep. the opponent, the enemy, coming in over that red and white and beautiful Keenan Stadium, he has never lost in the joint. Been there three times, walked away, W. What's up with that, Wes Durham?
You got me. That's a pretty good mark, though. I mean, the only thing I can think of closer than that is Tyler Hansbrough going 4-0 at Cameron as a player,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, talk about your rivals, and all of a sudden you're undefeated at your rival's venue. So, certainly that's a great storyline tomorrow. Pack the quarterback thing, and I get it with Bailey Hockman and Devin Leary, but the way the Wolfpack goes and hits you a little bit on defense. Now, here's the other thing, too. Whether it's Bailey Hockman, Devin Leary, Tole Avery, or Terry Harvey, they got guys that can catch it. I mean, you put it out there, they're going to make the plays. I mean, Emeka Emezi, Thayer Thomas, Kerry Angeline, Devin Carter, I mean – Porter Rooks. I mean, NC State's got guys that can catch the football. Now, I know Carolina has Brown and Newsom and Groves and all these other players, but the idea being that one of the things that catches your eye about NC State's how many different people they throw the football to, and that's a compliment to Tim Beck and the way he's developed their offensive packaging.
Does this game feel high scoring to you? Because it does to me. I think there could be some big plays.
Yeah.
It feels like it's in the 30s.
Feels like it lives in the 30s.
Yeah, this kind of feels like, you know, when we get back, God willing, on Monday and start going through, you know, wide receiver U and best of, worst of, I just get a sense that this game could deliver a number of highlights in all of those categories and segments that we do Monday. I think both teams could make big plays in this game.
Be interesting to see how it goes. Let's move along to Syracuse at Clemson. That's our ball game at noon here on ACC Network. Clemson will attempt to hold a third consecutive opponent to fewer than 10 first downs for the first time since 1954?
Oh, yeah. Whoa. Shutting people down back then, Wes. You kidding me? I got so mad we gave up 2 first downs in the second quarter. I about ran them boys off. Said, man, y'all need to tackle somebody. I'll spit this tobacco juice right in your eye. Come on, let's go tackle somebody. Now, Clemson's D's been out of sight. You kidding me? Their offense has been good, too. How about Syracuse, though, Wes? Let me give you one stat. The Orange have a grand total of 1 win in their history against a number 1 ranked team. 1. As you like to do to me all the time. 1984, Nebraska.
Nebraska.
You're the one. So the Cuse has a chance to double that total tomorrow. We'll talk about that with Sean McDonough coming up in about 25 minutes.
By the way, the Cuse, 19 first downs against Liberty last week. It is of note that when they beat Nebraska – at the Dome in 1984, the year before at Lincoln, they lost something like 63-7.
Just saying. Crazy stuff happens. College football.
Crazy stuff happens. Yep. Florida State is at Louisville. That's a noon ball game as well tomorrow. Passer rating targeting Florida State cornerback Asante Samuel Jr. is 33. Passer rating throwing the ball into the dirt every snap, 39.6. I love it. That's a great one. He is so good.
Yeah.
Man, is he good.
I'll give you a stat. This is the one that jumped out at me. And we were just bragging about Jordan Travis, former Louisville Cardinal, current Florida State Seminole, and what a difference he's made as far as being a playmaker. Since he's now gone under center at Florida State, they've had 31 possessions. On 15 of those, the Noles have scored. All right, 31 touches, 15 points, 15 scoring points. And you know what I'm saying? 15 and 31 scoring opportunities for the Noles, and they've taken care of it. So there is no doubt that they have found their catalyst and the guy that is the man moving forward. Now, we just discussed Florida State, Louisville. Cards are the only team in the league without a win in the conference. I would not have thought that at any point in time in April, May, June, July, August, September. They need one desperately tomorrow.
Yeah. by the way, 15 into 31, that's almost 50%, isn't it?
You are on a roll, West Durham. You are rolling. That Elon, that's got Elon is coming through the pores right now. You better.
Really,
you better.
None of those folks are watching the show. Actually,
no, they're not.
Notre Dame at Pittsburgh tomorrow. Sean McDonald joins us shortly. He'll talk about the Panthers and Irish. Notre Dame's won 28 straight games as a double-digit favorite. Last loss, Daniel Jones and the Blue Devils. How about that? 2016.
You know, a stat like that can only be formulated from Drew Brooks. That is a Drew Brooks special if there's ever been one. 28 straight games as a double-digit favorite. Who knew? I know who knows. Drew Brooks knows. Half the Lumberjacks. That is a Drew Brooks ran into
the Lumberjacks this week.
Well, that is a Drew Brooks ran into to the Bear in the hallway up there in Bristol, and they passed along that information. That's where that one comes from right there.
Okay.
Right? I mean, nobody would know that.
That's right. Virginia Tech's at Wake Forest. 3:30 kick tomorrow. Wake Forest has forced a turnover in the last 13 contests. The last time the Deacons failed to force a turnover in a game, September 21st, 2019, against Mighty Elon.
If you had the over and under on Elon references at 2, you would be a winner at 8:08 a.m. Speaking of turnovers, Wes, Wake Forest is one of only three teams in the Football Bowl subdivision without a pick, without throwing an INT.
Right.
Just saying. And there's the play that you thought should have made wide receiver you over the weekend.
Oh. Is that any good, by the way?
Wes is still bothered by that. Like, how is that not? How did that not make the list? We get one of those every week, though, don't we? I mean, there's somebody that will see a play and go, you know, you bozos on television and radio just rattled off 12 plays. And how in the world did you miss the – we get that every – which I love because it's like, hey, people are watching. People care. They want some love on all that stuff. So, again, if you're a fan of the ACC watching games this weekend, you can participate with Wide Receiver U. If you see a play, you go to a game, you're watching one, and you say, oh, my goodness, did you see that catch? And it could be a defensive play. We've had two defensive players win it already. Let us know. Just send an email, tweet, social media, whatever it is, hashtag Packer and Durham. And we accumulate all this stuff over the weekend, and then we get together on Monday and let it rip and see where it goes.
Yeah, it's the evolving group text during Saturdays and Sundays is always an entertaining value for me during commercial breaks of games.
Yeah, we're watching.
It's kind of my own personal way to catch up on everything going on.
Yeah, you're working and I'm watching TV.
Between the Lumberjacks and Packer. Yeah, and you're killing everybody. It's you know, come on now. It's just the we keep everybody in line for the show on Monday by texting during the day.
Oh, we try.
Some the way I try. Catch up on games.
Yeah, right. You got it. I mean, you're busy.
All right, Georgia Tech at Boston. Yeah, time. Georgia Tech at Boston College, 4 o'clock here on ACC Network with Chris Cotter, Mark Herzlick, and Kelsey Riggs. The Eagles are averaging 66.2 yards per game rushing. Fewest in the ACC and 75th out of 77 teams right now in FBS. Now, this is the last 2 years of Boston College football on the ground. This fall on the right, last fall on the left. Change of personality, Pack.
I don't know if I've been more incorrect about a team and their identity than I have been this year at BC. What I thought I was going to see, because we had no idea. All right, Jeff Hafley takes over. He's done a great job so far. We talked to David Bailey before the season started. This guy's a wrecking ball. I just assumed, given that offensive line and number 2-6 sitting there right there, that they would give you a dose of that all day long, and they have been the polar opposite. I could not have been more incorrect with what I thought I was going to see from BC offensively this year.
Right.
Jakovic's been out of sight.
Yep.
Bailey's a really good player. But, man, like you said, Wes, despite that big line and Bailey back there, they are throwing it all over the yard.
I agree with you. We have missed the point on Boston College in such a bad way. I mean, 61% of the time they're throwing the ball, Pack. 61% of the time. Nobody would have taken that in August. And it's just what's happened. One final game here to hit before we get to the timeout. Virginia at Miami is our primetime game tomorrow night, presented by GEICO here on ACC Network. From the Hard Rock at Miami Gardens, De'Eriq King and the Miami offense will look to take advantage of a Virginia defense that's given up 21 completions of 20 or more yards, tied for ninth most in FBS, and 7 runs of 20 or more. There's Kenneth Walker going 75. That's near the top 20. The Hurricanes have totaled 24 explosive plays this season, 14 through the air, 10 on the ground.
What I want to know is, are we going to see a single digit or double digits at quarterback for Virginia tomorrow? We going single or double?
I think there'll be double digit quarterbacks.
I think you're right.
Numbers.
I think you're right.
99, 98, and 36. Lindell Stone now. It's funny he's playing tomorrow at Hard Rock, because that's where Ryan Fitzpatrick plays, or used to play as the starter until he was moved this week for Tua. But he's got a lot of Fitz magic in him. Eric Wood is good friends with Fitzpatrick and confirmed that there's a lot of Fitz magic in Lindell Stone. Guy who sees the play, understands all the nuances and route packaging and things like that. He thinks that's his biggest advantage. But in order for them to run the football with that QB power and QB run stuff, they've got to have somebody else on the field.
As we said, there's 3 teams this week that are in desperation mode. Louisville, yep. Pitt, Virginia. Desperate.
Yep,
and,
I agree.
You know, do you think we will see a sweep? Do you think we get back here Monday and they're still in desperation mode? Do you think one finds a way to win? Or maybe multiple? Who knows? What do you think? I think one's going to win.
I don't know. The one that I think tomorrow that could be the most interesting is Pitt Notre Dame. Notre Dame really has to show most of the cards, if not all the cards, tomorrow in terms of taking care of Pittsburgh. They have to do things they have not done all year, Pack. You know that.
Yeah. I think one can win tomorrow of those 3.
Be interesting. The upset would be Pitt, right? The one that I think Louisville, Florida State closer than you think. I mean, Florida State won last week. Louisville has struggled, but do you still feel like those 2 teams are closer? I don't feel like Miami and Virginia's close.
I don't either.
Notre Dame Pitt could be the upset, and I feel like Louisville, Florida State of the 3 is probably the closer game, right?
Yep, that's how I feel the exact same thing. You and I have not had this conversation. I'm throwing it to you live on the air here, but I think one of them will find a win tomorrow.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Friday. Sean McDonough coming up here in about 15 minutes or so. But right now, Wes, your Saturday partner, joins us, Roddy Jones. Roddy, good morning.
Morning, Pack. I was not made aware that I was warming up the stage for Sean McDonough. So first off, to Sean, I apologize for what is going on, what is going to precede you. But that's big time, guys. You guys are bringing in the big guns on Friday.
Well, I mean, other than me. Well, you're leading the way. I mean, come on, that's how that works. I mean, Herzlick's up next hour. So, I mean, this is, you know, we're getting everybody ready to rock and roll for the weekend. And you and Wes Durham tomorrow with the call from Death Valley. If you're Syracuse, what are you thinking?
Well, Dino Babers called it sort of a measuring stick game to see where you are. I think if you're Syracuse, you're thinking, all right, look, this is going to be an uphill battle. But let's go out here and see if we can make it close one quarter at a time. Like, you're not trying to look forward to the end of the game. You're not trying to say, hey, if this and this goes right over the course of the game, we're going to beat Clemson. You have to literally go play by play, quarter by quarter. And just on that play, you have to make sure that you're doing your job. And if you're going to get beat, it's because the other guy is better than you and not because you're giving him anything. And then you hope that Clemson makes some mistakes so that this game stays close. And even that might not be enough because of the way Clemson's playing. So I think Dino Babers and Syracuse, it's a young team that some of these guys, it's going to be their first time stepping on the field with a team like Clemson. It's going to be their only time playing a number one overall pick. It may be their only time playing a first-round running back. It may be an only time playing a team that's in the running for the national championship during their career. So you have to enjoy that because you don't know what the schedule is going to look like next year. You don't know what it's going to be for the rest of your career. So you have to enjoy the moment of playing against a team as good as Clemson, and you hope that it goes your way if you make enough plays.
You know, Roddy, at certain points with Syracuse this year, I think you've got to look below the wins and losses and start digging in a little bit about this football team, not only what it is in 2020, but likely what it will be in 2021. And I look at all the young people they are playing at this point in the season because of injury or whatever the case may be. But I think if you follow ACC football tomorrow and you want to see Clemson play a young team, you're going to see some young guys get on the field for Syracuse who are going to be around a while. I mean, this Lee Koba at linebacker is a sophomore who looks like he'll hit you. Marlo Wax is a freshman, looks like he'll hit you. Some of the kids they've got in the back end from a secondary perspective. Now, they got veteran guys up front, Josh Black, McKinley Williams, guys like that. But if I'm Dino Babers and, to a degree, Tony White, who's installed this system, I'd be kind of excited to see how the young people go tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, I said it a few times last week when Georgia Tech played Clemson that the biggest thing I was watching for Georgia Tech last week was how did Jahmyr Gibbs and Jeff Sims look against Clemson? One of those guys looked like a freshman, Jeff Sims. Jahmyr Gibbs, however, was the best player on the field for Georgia Tech. He looked like a guy that could be playing on the other side. That's the same thing that I'm wondering for Syracuse. Which one of these guys is going to step up and look like they could play on the other side? Which one of these guys is going to seize the moment and be the guy who doesn't start looking at the long flowing locks of Trevor Lawrence and the rockets that are coming out of his right arm and instead are focused on their job beating an offensive blocker and getting to the quarterback or making a play on the ball? That's what you're looking to see, because when you're playing in games that are just average ACC games, that'll tell you so much about a guy. But if you're going to take the next step, when the lights are the brightest, when you're playing the best opponents, how does that person perform? Do they get overwhelmed by the moment? And that I think is a question that Dino Babers is going to be looking for as well. So I'm going to be looking at guys like Marlo Wax, Stephon Thompson, Sean Tucker on the offensive side of the football, Jahad Carter. They've got a ton of freshmen, and you mentioned Mikael Jones and Lee Koba, two sophomores. They've got a ton of guys that are going to be around for a while that I'm really interested to see in this game against this team that's playing that well. How do they perform?
Roddy, I mentioned to Wes earlier that Travis Etienne was rather quiet last week. I mean, you figure a 73-7 game, man, he must have ran for 200. No, almost the exact opposite. And when you have a guy as awesome as he is and who has kind of a quiet Saturday, normally they don't go quiet back-to-back weeks. And, of course, you got the Ted Brown rushing career rushing record there as a carrot. Something tells me that Travis Etienne is going to go crazy tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, the situations like last week are when it really hurts Travis Etienne being on such a talented team, because there are some games where it takes you a second as a running back to get into the flow of the game. I mean, how many times do we see backs that get off to a slow start in the first or second quarter, and then in the third quarter they find something, they find the rhythm, the offensive play caller finds a rhythm in terms of what the defense is doing. You just have to work yourself into the game sometimes, and because Travis Etienne is on such a great team with Trevor Lawrence and all those guys at receiver, he doesn't have time to do that. If you're not, if you don't put up your numbers for in your first 10 carries, you likely are going to have a slow day, because Clemson's going to move on. They're going to find something that's working a little better, and they're going to go 73-7 on somebody. So Travis Etienne, to me, just didn't have time to get in the flow of the game. That they exploded through the pass game. And I expect, especially against a Syracuse defense that's given up 300 yards rushing each of the past two times they've taken the field against Liberty and against Duke, I expect them to go to Travis Etienne early and often. I'm not sure the coaches are going to have the record in the front of their mind, but I don't think that they're going to shy away from the fact that, hey, let's give this dude the ball. Let's get him the confidence. Let's continue to keep his confidence high by putting up rushing numbers, big rushing numbers against a defense that's been a little suspect against the run. And if he happens to get the record, that won't be the worst thing for us to do it at home in a game like this.
Pack, do you realize that tomorrow at Frank Howard Field at Clemson's Memorial Stadium, that on the field, well, in the stadium tomorrow, will be three of the greatest ACC running backs in terms of career yards per carry?
There you go. Roddy, did you hear that?
I did hear that. Every time this comes up, I have to throw out the massive asterisk that comes with this. Because C.J. Spiller is obviously one of the greatest to ever play in the ACC. Travis Etienne is one of the greatest to ever play in the ACC, the greatest to ever play in the ACC. And I happen to be on the list with those guys. I'm not going to shy away from the fact that I'm on the list, but I just want to qualify it and say one of those three backs is not like the other ones. Two of them, one of them has been a first-round pick, one of them's going to be a first-round pick, and one of them didn't get picked. I got drafted, but not in this sport. I got drafted in another sport. So one of those running backs is not like the others that are going to be in the building at Frank Howard Field on Saturday.
Ronnie, let me tell you something. This is why Wes and I like to hang around with the real talent on ACC Network, because, you know, we just celebrated Jordan Cornett and Dallin Cuff being the 40 Under 40 award, and now – Wes drops this bomb on us. You know, now you know why we like just to hang out with all you guys. Now you know.
No, I'm still trying to figure out, because the other massive asterisk in this pack is that the ACC, you have to have 200 carries minimum to qualify for that list. Orwin Smith at Georgia Tech ended his career at 198 carries because he got hurt in his last game in the bowl game, or else he would have passed all of us. I think he'd be at the top. He may not be above Travis Etienne, but he certainly would be above me and would probably kick me off the list. So Orwin Smith should really be on that list. Robbie Godhigh doesn't have enough carries. He should be on the list. So, again, another major asterisk. I shouldn't even be on the list, to be honest with you.
Roddy, I'm going to say it for the 45th time on this show. If you got it, flaunt it. If you got it, flaunt it. That's all you got to know. We don't need the play-by-play. If somebody says it, you go, oh, yeah, as a matter of fact, would you like to see the list? Sure, hold on. And reach in your pocket, and you pull down and go, there. Hey, yeah. I'm just giving the facts, man. You can spit in however you want, but if you got it, flaunt it.
Yeah, I just don't want to mislead the people thinking that C.J. Spiller,
we're not misleading the people,
and Roddy Jones were equal running backs. I just don't want to mislead the people.
Stop.
I want the people to know that those guys are in a different category than I was.
It is what it is, my man.
Hey, let me just close by saying we're glad to have you back this week in the ACC after a couple of weeks on the road in other leagues, as they say.
I'm glad to be back in the league. Wes, we Pac may not know this, but we had to talk on game day last week because I was missing my guys. It was you and E. Wood at Wake Forest. I was missing you guys. I got a game, though, that was straight caffeine to the veins, a 51-50 game UCF Memphis that I still haven't come down from. So I am jacked all up right. Just off of that game.
Well, hey, you know what? You may see 100 points tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Wow. Yep. Really? Wow.
Sure, it'll okay. be distributed very soon.
All right.
Well, I mean, you saw 80 last Sit week tight. In Atlanta. I mean, there could be 100 Here points tomorrow.
Yes, stop it.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Sean McDonough will join us here momentarily. He's on the call for Pitt and Notre Dame this weekend. And, Wes, as we've discussed, it's strength versus strength in this game. Notre Dame's running game out of sight. Pitt stopping the run, best in the business. Something's got to give tomorrow.
Yeah, Sean's with us from Pittsburgh this morning, and we appreciate the time as always, and always good to catch up. And this has, I think, got a chance to be interesting with Notre Dame's run game and Pitt's defensive front, Sean.
Yeah, I hope it's interesting. You know, that's what we always hope for. I know you do when you do the games that you do. And we've been really lucky the last 3 weeks. You know, Molly McGrath joined our group. It'll be four games ago now, tomorrow. And we've had three barn burners in a row, including North Carolina and Florida State Saturday night. So, yeah, I think this has a chance to be a good game. Obviously, Notre Dame is leaning heavily on the run because they're good at it. But I also think if there's a weakness there that would concern me going forward, they don't do as much in the passing game as you would like. I think largely because the wide receivers, looks to me, watching tape, have a hard time getting open. You know, they don't have some of the playmakers they've had in the recent past at that position. You know, maybe that'll emerge as the season goes along. And Pitt's still really good on defense. You know, they've had some injuries and opt-outs that have been hurtful, but I do think that's really going to be probably the most interesting matchup, Wes, as you say, the really good Notre Dame offensive line against a good Pitt defensive front.
You know, Sean, it's interesting you bring up Florida State, North Carolina, because I was really going to go there with you. I thought last week was a critical moment in the year for Florida State, right? Here comes number five to your house. Folks are questioning about, hey, are they going to tank? What are they going to do? And, man, they play lights out first half, jumping out of that 31-7 lead. You almost get the same sense with Pitt this week. You know, they've lost three in a row, a team that thought they could be in the ACC championship conversation. They let some two one-point games get away from them. You kind of get a sense that it's all in this week for Pitt, don't you? And, again, who knows what happens at quarterback. But much like Florida State the week before, it's that moment now in the season for Pitt. Hey, you got a top three team coming to your house. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And yeah, I was just reading an article this morning about their propensity about once a year to knock off a ranked team when you don't expect them to do it. Last year was UCF, who I think was undefeated, and they were number 15 in the country when Pitt played them. You know, they shockingly won at Clemson. I think it was in 2016,
right?
Which might be the last home loss that Clemson had. You know, they knocked off Miami when Miami was 10-0. So, you know, they have the knack for doing that. It seems about once a year. Maybe tomorrow will be the day. I think they're good enough. You know, as you said, Pac, it's frustrating for them. You know, the Boston College game, you kick a 58-yard field goal to get into overtime, and then the same guy misses an extra point. You know, so it's
crazy.
How does that happen? But, yeah, I think they're good enough to do it. And you know, just reading this morning, I read an article here. Well, they won't fire Pat Narduzzi, but, you know, in other years, maybe they would. So when you get to that point in year six in your program, you know, you need some momentum starters, and this is certainly the chance for one.
Sean, interesting, too. You mentioned the games you guys have had, your particular package. I mean, you had that deal last week, and then the week before you had the SEC gone whack, right, with Alabama and Ole Miss. Wasn't that you guys as well? I mean, that was absolutely bananas. Are you noticing that college football is – if you can play defense and you can play it at a decent level, you've got not just an advantage, you may have an extreme advantage on people.
Oh, no doubt. You know, and that's obviously the concern for Alabama. You know, when people talk about Clemson and Alabama, you know, if they played now, I would choose Clemson to win just because they play excellent defense. And, you know, Alabama hasn't. They looked a little bit better against Georgia last week, but Georgia has kind of been offensively challenged here, certainly relative to their defense in recent years. So, you know, we haven't seen Ohio State yet. I think they have a chance to be the whole package, you know, offense, defense, and special teams. But, you know, right now I think Clemson, you know, they're definitively number one in the polls, and I think deservedly so because their defense is better than the other teams that are near the top. Now, this Notre Dame team plays excellent defense, but, you know, they haven't played anybody yet either. You know, Duke, South Florida, Florida State now looks like a better win. Louisville, you know, and this is the first time that they're playing away from home. So I think that'll be an interesting part of tomorrow. You can make the argument that Pitt is the best team that they will have played, and it's their first road game. It's only going to be in front of 5,500 people, but it's a road game.
Sean, you know, we're sitting there talking about defense. I actually want to talk about offense with Pitt and Notre Dame because both of these teams at times get inside the red zone and you wonder what's going on. I mean, last week, I mean, for Notre Dame to score 12 points and still find a way to win is actually remarkable in this day and age of college football. And Pitt had a gazillion chances at Miami last week in the red zone, but they're kicking field goals all day. So you got to figure if you're going to pull off the upset, sevens versus threes tomorrow will be critical for Pittsburgh if they try to knock off Notre Dame.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, I think one thing in defense of Notre Dame last week, I just read that, you know, Ian Book said it was the windiest game that he's ever played in. So I think that might have had something to do with the low score on both sides. But, yeah, you're right. If Pittsburgh's going to do it, they need to score touchdowns. It'll be interesting. I don't think Pickett's going to play quarterback. I know they haven't announced that yet, but I think it's likely that we're going to see Yellen again for the second week in a row. And that's too bad. You know, I thought Yellen was decent, especially in his first start for Pitt. But Kenny Pickett, as Brian Kelly pointed out, is one of the best quarterbacks in the league, in the conference. So like to see him out there, probably enhance their chances of pulling off the upset, but it doesn't look like he's going to play.
It also begs a little bit more about their run game or lack thereof. I know they've tried a couple different ways to get it going, Sean, but boy, it's almost crazy that Pittsburgh's struggled to run the ball the way they have this year.
Yeah, it's, I believe they're 70th in the country in rushing, 107 yards a game. And there's only 77 teams that are in those rankings right now because a lot of these conferences haven't played yet. So that's bad. And, you wonder if it's, they can't do it or they're just not committed to doing it, but they are very pass happy, you know, in terms of the numbers and of called passes versus runs. You know, I think Duke is the only team that's thrown it more in the country than Pitt has. And I don't know if that's Mark Whipple or if it's just they don't feel like they can run it, but they haven't been able to. And you'd have to think that if they're going to have a chance here tomorrow, they at least have to establish that a little bit.
Sean, I'm going to let you take off the worldwide leader hat and put on the alum hat. How?
And the shirt, right?
And the
keep
shirt,
the shirt
of
on.
Course.
Keep
and
the shirt on.
If, it's, yeah, that's if it. It's free, I'll take three. That's the expression of every meeting.
Now I'm going to let you get the orange pom-poms out a second. It is. Last year was a tough year for Dino, right? There's no doubt. Two years ago.
I have to go now.
No, you're not allowed. You get to wear the alum hat now, all right? Last year was a tough year. You were hoping for a bounce back. Almost anything that could go wrong has gone wrong. Injuries, opting out, the pandemic. I mean, you name it, it's been a problem. Where do you think this thing goes with Dino? He just got the vote of confidence from John Waldhack. They go at Clemson tomorrow, and I'm not talking about that game. I'm talking about big picture. Can Syracuse get this thing back? And I'm not talking about winning 10 games every year. If you do, great. But can Syracuse get this thing back where, you know what, they scare people every single week they play. They're fun to watch offensively. It's just hard to watch Dino's team struggle offensively because you know he's a great offensive coach. You're just so used to them going up and down the field. So can the Cuse get this thing back in a short period of time? And I'm not talking necessarily 2020. And I want you to answer that as an alum.
2020, it's not coming back. You know, I don't even want to guess what the score would be tomorrow. You know, I hope Dabo is nice, which is, and he will be, I'm sure. Although 73-70 at Georgia Tech has me concerned for what it could be tomorrow. But it's hard to believe because you guys know, I did a couple of these Clemson-Syracuse games, the last two, I think. And as you guys know, Syracuse knocked them off a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, I guess it was now.
Right.
2 years ago in that 10-win season, they were ahead in the final minute, really controlled most of the game. I think just ran out of gas.
Yep.
And that was the famous game where Trevor Lawrence got hurt and Bryce came off the bench and led them to that victory. And then last year I did the game was Saturday night. There was a lot of hype, as you guys know, for Syracuse last year coming off the 10-win season, season tickets way up. The Clemson game was the first sellout they had at home in about 20 years. And before they even got to Clemson, which I believe was the third game of the year, they lost to Maryland the week before, which took a lot of the air out of that. But I don't know. I like Dino. As you guys know, you've talked to him. He's an interesting guy. He's a good guy. The 10-win season gave us all hope, but this is going to be 4 years out of five with a losing record and really a pretty significant losing record. I mean, you have 2-4-8, 5-7, and I don't know if they'll win another game this year, so it's probably it could be a 1-win season. But I think it can be done there, Pack, to answer your question, which was a long time ago now as I ramble on. But I think they have everything you need to win. Al Groh is a great friend of our family, and he's been up there a couple times to do games, and he has said to me a couple of times, I don't understand why they can't get it going there. It's a great school, beautiful campus. They have excellent facilities. They just upgraded the dome. So I think they can do it. It's been done there in the past, but this clearly is not heading in the right direction right now. But as you said, John Wildhack's committed to Dino for next year. It's hard to imagine many coaches are going to get fired. I mean, in this COVID world and with schools hemorrhaging money all over the place, I think a lot of these schools just can't afford to get rid of the coach even if they wanted to. But I'm behind him.
Winner tie. Question. Yeah. Winner tie.
I caught that.
All right.
I'm not sure Wes did, but I caught that one.
I caught it. I heard him. McDonough, he plays the sly game on you every once in a while. That's why we're doing these last two questions.
Gotta listen.
Right. Yeah. All right, you got to pay attention with McDonough. That's one thing you're always you're always advised to listen when Sean talks. Okay, here's my concept question. Number one, I've heard a lot this week about the win over Nebraska at the Carrier Dome when they were number one the year before, losing in Lincoln like 63-7.
Right.
I don't know if there are any similarities to that. Do you sense any similarities to where this game is tomorrow and that game many years ago? None.
No.
Okay.
The 60s, that's back when I was in school and just getting out of school. So I remember that well, because as you guys know, I've talked about before, one of the great blessings of my life was having the chance to be a work study assistant for Coach McPherson, Dick McPherson.
Yeah.
Right there with my dad as the finest man I've ever known in my life. So, I think we felt then like there, it was building in the right direction. The 63-7 was rough, but I know our coaches for 365 days reminded Nebraska onside kicked in that game. And I think they were ahead 35-0. And, the coaches used that as a motivator for the entire year. But I don't see it. I don't think this Syracuse team, you mentioned it. With all the injuries and the opt-outs and everything else going on, this Syracuse team isn't anywhere near as talented as that one was that beat number one Nebraska. That was kind of the beginning of the team that got us to 87 when we had the undefeated regular season and then tied Auburn in the Sugar Bowl. We were starting in that
all right,
direction.
Pack. Yeah. All right. One thing we have to agree to at some point in this show's history. Before they tell Mark and I to go away, Sean, and they will tell us to go away at some
probably
point.
Probably about a half an hour
we're
from now.
We're going to do whatever you're proposing soon, then.
All right. I need you to come on this show. Pack will do the Frank Howard impression, which he does a phenomenal Frank Howard impression. Mark does. And I'll need you to do
player.
Coach.
There's only one.
On this network.
On ACC network,
on this
there's
network,
only one.
Sean. Only the coach at Clemson. There's only one.
I shouldn't have brought that up.
You know what? In fact, they may kick us off now 10 minutes from now as opposed to a half an hour after that statement right there from McDonough.
All right. You come back to the show. You do Coach Mack, and Pack will do Coach Howard, and we will have old coaches talk to one another about games.
All right.
No, Coach Mack was the best. Absolutely the best. I would love to do that. Yeah. I don't do his invitation very well, but I've been very blessed in my life. But as I said, knowing him was one of the greatest blessings and one of the great, maybe the greatest honor of my life is when his family asked me to give the eulogy at his funeral. A couple of times I get emotional now just thinking about it again. Yeah, he was a special guy. You know, great, great coach, obviously. Hall of Fame coach. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame, deservedly so. But just, you know, as I said, I was the lowest person on the totem pole in the football operation, but he treated me like I was the star quarterback. You know, he treated everybody that way everywhere he went in the community, which was why he was loved as much as he was, even when we weren't winning at the beginning of his tenure there. So we miss him. I miss the phone calls. You know, he was famous for, he'd leave you a message. He'd always sign off like he was signing a letter. You know, he'd always say, "Isn't it nice to get a call from someone who doesn't want anything? Love you, Coach Mac." You know, and it's so true. I mean, when you think about it, how often now do any of us really get a call when it isn't from somebody who wants something, right?
That's a good point.
It's your friends. Yeah, you know? Yeah. So, I miss him, and I really miss him. Yeah. He did a phenomenal job. And, you know, to answer your question earlier, Pat, I think – one of the reasons I believe in Dino is, you know, his personality is quirky, but he has a lot of personality. And I think, you know, that can attract people. Coach Mack got that thing going and handed it off to Paul Pasqualoni really through the strength of his personality. I mean, when he said to Tim Green and the other recruits, that local recruits, we needed to get it going, we're going to do this, people believed him. And not because, you know, he was a salesman, because he was going to get it done.
Yeah.
And he did. And what's more, we got to get it done.
That's it. Winner tie. By the way, you know, he's such an easy he's such an easy guy to root for that you just hate to see him have a season like this where, you know, almost everywhere he's turned, there's been a headache or a problem. I mean, even the new
– Yeah, and that's why I think we have to dismiss it. I mean, I agree. Now, it's trending in the wrong direction. Right, last year, to me, was a startling year. I mean, you were good. I think what last year showed us was Eric Dungy was a really important player.
Yep.
Just, and you talk about just you did a lot of their games, Wes, when Eric was there. You know, he almost willed them to victory or willed them to keep picking up the first down on a key third down or fourth down. And boy, was he tough. You know, I remember calling John Harbaugh when Eric had run out of eligibility and said, you know, "I don't think you'll be a quarterback in the NFL, but he'd be a heck of a tight end or a guy who'll run down on special teams and crush somebody." And I know he's had some injuries and he had a lot of concussions, but boy, he was a terrific college football player.
No doubt. Well, listen, have a great broadcast tomorrow.
Hey, Sean, thanks. Thanks as always. Enjoy the game tomorrow.
It's good to see you. I hope I wasn't too obnoxious, but I know that the guest – obnoxiousness meter has been set by Billis and can never be passed. So I feel like I'm comfortably below that bar.
You know what? That line alone may get us through another week of shows, which is beautiful.
Yeah, there you go. If you're still here at the end of the year, later in the season, if you want another guest, I'm happy to come back. We don't have much to do here in the hotel. You know, none of us can go anywhere, so happy to do it.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Sean McDonough, always fun. Roddy, rocking and rolling, getting ready to tag team with Wes tomorrow in Death Valley. Herzlick's coming up during the Power Hour, and we're going to spend some time talking about the BC and Georgia Tech. And now I hope those folks at Boston College understand that Georgia Tech's in the league. I mean, it's been a while, Wes. It's been a while since the Jackets have made that road trip.
2008, Paul Johnson's first road game as Georgia Tech coach was at Boston College.
How about that?
Is that a long time ago?
12 stinking years.
Yeah. Well, the other game in the series that was scheduled was actually one that took place on the road for both teams. Remember, they opened the year a couple of years ago in Dublin, Ireland.
2016.
And that was technically that was a BC home game. But they went over there on a collaborative effort and played in Dublin. And, you know, so But, yeah, it's been since 2012 since Georgia Tech's been to Alumni Stadium. And it will only be their second visit to Alumni Stadium ever. I think the other one was in 1997 when George O'Leary's first bowl team went up there. And Mike Cloud was the running back star for BC that day. I'd have to go back and double check. That's a quick think on top of my off the top of my head that was the last time. I think it'll be an interesting game. The Georgia Tech has got to continue. Pack, you know, sometimes Jeff Collins talks about winning and losing, but he also talks about just getting better as a program. Despite 73-7 last week, the worst loss Georgia Tech has suffered in ACC play, worst loss that biggest margin of victory in ACC history in terms of conference play. If you're Jeff Collins in Georgia Tech, you got to find a way to move that flag down the road a little more, right? I mean, yeah. And then meanwhile, BC, 5 turnovers last week in Blacksburg, that's got to change.
Yeah, listen, last week was ugly for both of them. There's no question. They both got spanked pretty good. But that's one of those coachable moments, I think. And I'll go back and I'll say it again. I know it was ugly in Atlanta for Georgia Tech fans Saturday. They will use that as a positive down the road. They won't forget about that when you'll build on it. And I think the same thing with BC. You know what? You played a really good Virginia Tech team. When you turn it over 5 times, you're not good enough to beat anybody when you turn it over 5 times. And they got whipped. So I think both these teams coming off the L's have something to prove in terms of, hey, that's last week. That's not who we are. And the fact that they really don't see each other a whole lot, which we've talked about, we'll get into this with more with Mark Hersley coming up here in about 15 minutes, adds for some intrigue and some mystery just to see, all right, who's going to bounce back? You can't let those kind of weekends last week affect what you do this week. It's a whole new ballgame.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.